Joshua chapter 22. Then Joshua summoned the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half tribe of Manasseh, and said to them, "You have done all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded, and you have obeyed me in everything I commanded. For a long time now, to this very day, you have not deserted your fellow Israelites, but have carried out the mission the Lord your God gave you. Now that the Lord your God has given them rest as he promised, return to your homes in the land that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you on the other side of the Jordan. But be very careful to keep the commandment and the law that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you, to love the Lord your God, to walk in obedience to him, to keep his commands, to hold fast to him, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul." Then Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went to their homes. To the half tribe of Manasseh, Moses had given the land in Bashan. To the other half of the tribe, Joshua gave land on the west side of the Jordan, along with their fellow Israelites. And then when Joshua sent them home, he blessed them, saying, "Return to your homes with your great wealth, with large herds of livestock, with silver, gold, bronze, and iron, and a great quantity of clothing, and divide the plunder from your enemies with your fellow Israelites." So the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half tribe of Manasseh left the Israelites at Shiloh in Canaan to return to Gilead, their own land, which they had acquired in accordance with the command of the Lord through Moses. And when they came to Geliloth near the Jordan in the land of Canaan, the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh had a bright idea. They built an imposing altar there by the Jordan. And when the Israelites heard that they had built the altar on the border of Canaan at Geliloth near the Jordan on the Israelite side, the whole assembly of Israel gathered at Shiloh to go to war against them. So the Israelites sent Phinehas, son of Eleazar, the priest, to the land of Gilead, to Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. With him they sent 10 of the chief men, one from each of the tribes of Israel, each the head of a family division among the Israelite clans. And when they went to Gilead, to Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, they said to them, "The whole assembly of the Lord says, 'How could you break faith with the God of Israel like this? How could you turn away from the Lord and build yourselves an altar in rebellion against him now? Was not the sin of Peor enough for us? Up to this very day we have not cleansed ourselves from that sin, even though a plague fell on that on the community of the Lord. And are you now turning away from the Lord? If you rebel against the Lord today, tomorrow he will be angry with the whole community of Israel. If the land you possess is defiled, come over to the Lord's land where the Lord's tabernacle stands and share the land with us. But do not rebel against the Lord or against us by building an altar for yourselves other than the altar of the Lord our God." And when Achan the son of Zerah was unfaithful in regard to the devoted things, did not wrath come on the whole community of Israel? He was not the only one who died for his sin. Then Reuben, Gad, and a half tribe of Manasseh replied to the heads of the clans of Israel, "The mighty one, God the Lord, the mighty one, God the Lord, he knows. And let Israel know, if this has been in rebellion or disobedience to the Lord, do not spare us this day. If we've built our own altars to turn away from the Lord and to offer burnt offerings and grain offerings or to sacrifice fellowship offerings on it, may the Lord himself call us to account. No, we did it for fear that someday your descendants might say to ours, 'What do you have to do with the Lord, the God of Israel? The Lord has made the Jordan the boundary between us and you, you Reubenites and Gadites. You have no share in the Lord. So your descendants might cause ours to stop fearing the Lord. That's why we said, let us get ready and build an altar, but not for burnt offerings or sacrifice. On the contrary, it is to be a witness between us and you and the generations that follow that we will worship the Lord at his sanctuary with our burnt offerings, sacrifice, and fellowship offerings. Then in the future, your descendants will not be able to say to ours, you have no share in the Lord.' And we said, if they ever say this to us or to our descendants, we will answer, 'Look at the replica of the Lord's altar, which our Israelites built, not for burnt offerings and sacrifices, but as a witness between us and you. Far be it from us to rebel against the Lord and turn away from him today by building an altar for burnt offerings, grain offerings, and sacrifices other than the altar of the Lord our God that stands before his tabernacle.' And when Phinehas the priest and the leaders of the community, the heads of the clans of the Israelites, heard what Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh had to say, they were pleased. And Phinehas, son of Eleazar the priest, said to Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh, "Today we know that the Lord is with us, because you have not been unfaithful to the Lord in this matter. Now you have rescued the Israelites from the Lord's hands." Then Phinehas, son of Eleazar the priest, and the leaders returned to Canaan from their meeting with the Reubenites, the Gadites in Gilead, and reported to the Israelites. They were glad to hear the report and praise God. And they talked no more about going to war against them to devastate the country where the Reubenites and the Gadites lived. And the Reubenites and the Gadites gave the altar this name, "A witness between us that the Lord is God." Long story. A while back, not that long ago, one of our mission partners who works in a sensitive part of the world was saying that perhaps one of the biggest obstacles to the growth of the Christian faith in that part of his world is that the Christians distrust each other. He said if only they trusted each other more, they might well see more fruit for the gospel. Sadly, the history of the church is littered with schism. The Grand Schism happened a long time ago. We're used in Britain to talking about 1066. Everyone knows that from school. It's when the Normans invaded us and began to change everything in our nation. And about 13 years before that, there was perhaps an even more important event in the history of the church. 1053 occurred what they called the Great Schism, when the Eastern Orthodox Church split finally and irrevocably with the Roman Catholic Church in the West. So East and West split, the Greek-speaking Eastern part, the Latin-speaking Western part. The Eastern part dominated by the great Greek traditions of the church, that went right back to the early Greek fathers and the patriarchs who ran the church and the Pope in the West. They fell out, finally, and were not reconciled, still have not been fully reconciled. It was a disaster, led eventually, 150 years later, to the fall of Constantinople, which is now Istanbul. And it seriously weakened the Christian faith in the world. The result of church splitting is never good, and that's why Jesus prayed in John chapter 17, verses 20 to 23. "My prayer," he says, "is not for my disciples here alone, but I pray for also for those who will believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. I've given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one, I in them and you in me, so that they may be brought to complete unity. Then the world will know that you sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me." So Jesus wants God's people to be together, and we've managed to fight for 2,000 years. And we go back to this story. This story, in a sense, is a warning to God's people everywhere to maintain unity. So let's go and look at the blessings of unity. When the people of Israel were going to enter the Promised Land, they came in from the east through the territory that's now the nation of Jordan. And they found that the land there was really, really quite nice. It was relatively flat. It was good cattle pasture, and they knew how to farm cattle. They were very good at it. They'd been doing it in Egypt. They didn't need to learn any new skills. They didn't need to learn this newfangled crop-growing business. It was within their comfort zone. The land was good. And they said, "Gosh, tell you what, I know the Promised Land is dripping with milk and honey, blah, blah, blah. But actually, we rather like the land here. We could be very, very happy here." And they went to Moses and said, "Look, can we not settle here? And Moses said, well, if you settle here, how will we fill the promised land? How will we settle Israel within Canaan? And so they came to the conclusion that the tribe of Reuben, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh would settle in cities on the east of Jordan, but their soldiers, most of the bulk of their fighting men, would cross the Jordan and help the other Israelites gain their inheritance from God. And it's what they did. It must have been difficult, because there was a job to be done elsewhere, but they wanted to stay at home. But remarkably, they decided, although they had all the home comforts, they would leave their home comforts and they would go and fight the battle with other Christians, with other believers in God on the other side of Jordan. It was quite a brave decision in some ways. And I've often seen Christians who've been very happy in church, very settled, have a nice, settled, easy life, and suddenly and they get a call to do a job somewhere else, and they give that comfort of the church up and they go and work in a church plant, or they go and take on something that they've not done before, or something that's a problem for them, or going to be difficult, make life awkward. And strangely enough, they do it. They decide not to be a couch potato Christian, not to be a kind of Christian, what C.T. Studd called chocolate soldiers, you know, that melts in the heat. They decide to give up their comforts in order to serve God. And remarkably, they kept their promise. Let's look at verse 2. Joshua commends them. He says, you've done all that Moses, a servant of the Lord, commanded. They stuck to it. They completely stuck to it. They must have been tempted to go home many times. Must have been tired and threatened and in battle, dreaming of their cattle farm back home, dreaming of their families, their wives, their children. But they didn't give up till their job was done. And I look back through 40 years of ministry, and do you know, I've seen so many Christians give up halfway. I really have. I've seen so many Christians start something with so much enthusiasm, but they don't finish it. It is one of the curses of church life. Christians who start something but drop out halfway through. They don't see it through to the end. They get tired. They get bored. Because a lot of Christian service is quite heavy going. It's a bit of a drudgery, you know. It requires discipline. While everyone else is off enjoying themselves, you're opening the church up, moving chairs, making coffee, visiting people, scrubbing floors, whatever you're doing. It is not an exciting kind of lifestyle. And I've seen so many Christians, they start, get halfway and give up, get distracted, go and do something else. Huge problem in churches. But these guys, you know, they didn't do that. And they stuck it to the end. They stuck to the task. So in verse 6, when they go home, Joshua says, well done, guys. Well done, guys. He blessed them and sent them home. Do you know what? When we die and go to heaven, when we die and go to be with Jesus, all we take with us is our spiritual CV. Think about it. When you and I go to be with Jesus, we don't take our bank account. We don't take our house. We don't take our car. We don't take our university degree. When you and I go to be with Jesus, all that we take with us into eternity is a spiritual CV. And so many Christians are going to pass into eternity with a very empty CV because they didn't stick it till the end. That's the truth. Sad, but it's true. But these guys, they move on. They stick to it. There's a blessing in loyalty. And then there's damage in poor communication. So one of the things, another thing that gets in the way of God's work is poor communication. Verses 9 and 10. Building that altar seemed like a good idea at the time. In fact, it wasn't a bad idea at all. What they forgot to do, they forgot to tell the other Israelites what they were doing. It was a simple breakdown of communication. They didn't tell the other believers what they were doing. And then the other believers, the other followers of God, they misinterpreted what these guys were doing. All they wanted to do was build an altar. They were good at building altars. They didn't want anything huge. It would require a lot of maintenance. They didn't want to build a statue or anything like that. So they built a simple altar. Didn't cost much, easy to build, and they were quite good at building them anyway. They'd been doing it for years in the wilderness. So they built an altar as like a witness to show the tribes on both sides of the River Jordan. And it wasn't just the River Jordan, because of course the River Jordan is in a deep rift, in a deep valley that's below sea level. So it isn't just like a little river, it's great big cliffs on either side. It's just, you know, it's quite a large geographical barrier. So they just thought this would be a good idea to build this thing. But they didn't tell what was going on. So the others said, do you know what they're doing? They're declaring independence. They're building their own altar. They're going to start sacrificing on it. They're going to have priests. And they're going to completely form a separate nation. This is independence. They've clearly had an independence referendum that we didn't know about. And they've declared that they're going to be an independent state. They're going to join the Eurozone, and they're going to build, and they're going to start having their own religion on the other side. And we've got to stop it. So that they have a war party, and they decide, let's go in, you know, with a heavy fist and a heavy hand, because they didn't know. It was open to misinterpretation. There's an old translation of a verse in the New Testament, that it's translated differently these days, but in the old verses, avoid the appearance of evil. And sometimes, you know, sometimes as Christians, we've got to avoid giving the wrong impression. Got to avoid giving the wrong impression. And sometimes it might be a bit of a bore to do it, but, you know, it's better to be on the safe side. Just let people know what's happening. Be up and above board about everything. And obviously God's people are prone to division. Somebody suggested we should rewrite the verse of the New Testament where Jesus, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there I am in their midst. We should write some, it should be where two or three are gathered together in my name, there you have a denomination. And when they go home, you've got two or three new denominations formed. 100 years ago, there were less than 1,000 denominations in the world. These days, there are more than 42,000 denominations in the world. We are so good at splitting. And we don't want to make it worse by lack of communication. So there's a danger of poor communication. And there's a danger of hasty conclusions, verses 11 to 14. There are the hair-trigger Christians. Have you met them? Hair-trigger Christians. You know what I mean by hair-trigger? Guns that have a very light trigger. You cough and the thing fires. They're Christians that are like that. They are just so ready to condemn. So ready to throw stones. So ready to fire from their hip. So many Christians simply don't listen to others. How much does it cost to talk to people? Actually, you know, most of you have got free calls at weekends, haven't you, on BT or something like that? Or you've got free. A lot of you have got free calls on your mobile phone. It doesn't actually cost us anything to phone these days because it's all included in some package. And yet, sometimes for that lack of a phone call, we get ourselves into trouble. I'm the same, I do it. Should have rang, didn't. I'd never use up all my minutes anyway. Could have done it, would have cost me nothing, I didn't do it. Caused misunderstanding. And people just find... Clive Calver, is a Christian leader, now lives in America. But one day he got a phone call from a friend of his, and his friend rang him up and he said, Clive, ringing up, I'm in trouble. He said, what's wrong? He said, I've left my wife. He said, you've left your wife? He said, well, actually, no, I haven't. We're still living together. He said, why are you ringing? He said, well, the rumours got out that I have. And I was due to preach at a church, and they cancelled because I've left my wife. So Clive said, is your wife there? He said, of course she's here. So put on the phone. So he said to my wife, has he left you? Of course he hasn't left us. We're perfectly happily married. But the word's gone out into the Christian community that he's left me. And now nobody will invite him to preach. He's become a pariah, you know. And Clive Calver had to get into the midst of it and ring around and tell people it wasn't true and it was a slander, it was a lie. But, you know, the Christians just so red. Not one had bothered to check it out. Hair trigger Christians. I don't know about you, I've jumped to hasty conclusions on far too many occasions. I'm prone to it. Are you? Some of you are clearly not. One or two of you are nodding. One or two of you are saying, yes, Peter, you are. So, hair trigger Christians, a danger of hasty conclusions. But there's a joy of reconciliation. Verses 21 to 23, it's all explained. And they're told, yeah, it's not for sacrifices. And then in verse 29, far be it from us to rebel against the Lord and to turn away from him today. Far be it from us. So they begin to talk to each other, listen to each other and understand each other. And they begin to put it right. You know, there's the old saying, we'll disagree, you know, you do God's work your way and I'll do it his. But that's not what these guys do. They both agree that they'll do God's work together in his way together. They're in different places now. They develop in different styles of living. But they're going to keep it going themselves. So let's jump to verse 31. And Phinehas, son of Eleazar, the priest, said to Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh, today we know that the Lord is with us, because you've not been unfaithful to the Lord in this matter. Here's the proof that God is with you and with us, that we're together in Christ, in God. And when Christians agree, it's proof that God is with us. When Christians get on, it's proof that God is with us. When Christians are reconciled, it's proof that God is with us. When Christians support each other, it's proof that God is with us. There's no better proof of that than Christians looking after each other. I get huge pleasure of seeing churches doing well. I get great pleasure of seeing Penracht doing well. I get great pleasure from seeing other churches doing well. Because it's all the same team. It's all God's work. So in verse 33, they tell everybody else, and everybody backs down. They decide to play this as one team. And then in verse 34, the Reubenites and the Gadites give the altar this name, a witness between us that the Lord is God. Witness to their truth. It's just a lovely, lovely name for an altar, isn't it? Just have that on it, written on it, and chipped on it in stone or whatever. This is the witness that both sides, they over there and us over here, we're one in God. And I just kind of finish with a question ringing in my head. If Jesus is still praying for the unity of Christians, what is his prayer for us as a church? That is such a big question that I'm not even going to try and answer it. You can have to think about it. Email me your response. It'd be interesting to hear. But that is what God wants, to bring us together, to converge us as Christians on the essential, which is preaching Jesus Christ and serving the world together. So much we can do, so much more we can do together.